Welcome to Crime Wire, the place for information, news, and most importantly, justice. I am Kim Colton, your host. Our interactive website is www.crimewiresite.com. You can call in anytime during the show. The number is 1-646-478-0982. Or you can participate in tonight's show simply by going to the live interactive chat room here on Blog Talk Radio. If you are a friend or family member and would like to send CrimeWire information on an unsolved or suspicious death case or have a specific crime-related topic you'd like to have discussed on a future show, email us at thecrimewire@gmail.com. My special guest tonight is Dr. Maggie Zingman. In September of 2004, the life of a beautiful 18-year-old was brutally taken. Brittany Phillips had just signed up for college classes at Tulsa Community College and secured an apartment near the school. Brittany was raped and suffocated, left for dead. When friends and family had not heard from her after a few days and she had not attended classes, it was reported to the police, who notified her mother, Maggie Zingman, of her daughter's murder. Brittany Phillips was buried on her 19th birthday, October 4th, 2004. Fast forward to 2013, 9 long years later, and there is still no suspect or arrest in the case. Maggie Zingman, Ph.D., is not a stranger to criminals. Her work as a staff psychologist and trauma specialist at an Oklahoma women's facility brings her in contact with all varieties of the criminal element. She realized early on that DNA would most likely play a large part of solving Brittany's case and perhaps others. But after 9 years, there has not been the match she has been looking for. Maggie, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Kim.
It's so nice to have you here with us tonight. Wow, that is everybody's nightmare right there.
It really is. It really is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Tell us about Brittany. Tell us her story.
Okay. Well, you know, Brittany was an individual who, you know, really wanted to live life to the fullest. And even though she was a year younger than everybody that she went to school with, she actually went away to college the year before she was killed to Florida and went there on a chemistry scholarship. And that's when I was concerned. You know, the first time my daughter's far away from me, I didn't expect that when she came home, because she wanted to be back nearer to family, that's when I would lose her. She was highly intelligent. She had gone to college on a chemistry scholarship. I thought she was beautiful. I'm prejudiced because I'm her mother, but, you know, if people who look at her pictures.
She is very, very beautiful.
Yeah, she was.
Very beautiful.
She stopped traffic when she was little with those long curls and everything. And, you know, she was still young enough to want to be home, but she was going to school and working. And actually, the apartments that she moved into were right next to the high school that she had graduated from. And so I thought nothing of, you know, being unsafe because, one, we had never heard about anything in the 4 years she went to high school, and we checked the police website, and there wasn't anything there that really raised our concerns. It's what we learned later, you know, that we wish we had known about. But she had a large circle of friends, of which, you know, we've investigated all of them. But she just, she lived life to the fullest. Even so much so that when she was real little, we said her middle name was Accident, because she would jump in the pool backwards, or she'd be doing spins and fall down on the concrete, and she was always at the emergency room. But, you know, things had calmed down. I wasn't worried about her when she was 18 anymore.
Yeah, for sure. You don't expect, and as a mom, of course you worry when they go off to college. I worried with my children too. It just, when they went off to grade school, high school, it didn't matter.
Of course. Of course. Well, even when they're born, you know, you, at first, you know, when we even think, I can really remember, you know, when both my kids were born, thinking, what if, but we put that out of our mind so that our kids can live a little. But it's an interesting thing that came back to play is initially after her murder, a lot of her friends' parents who were friends of mine stayed away from me. And what I finally figured out, it wasn't because I was talking about it all the time, but it was seeing me reminded them, you know, it was too near because they thought, you know,
right.
you know, that could have been my daughter because they were all the same age. And, you know, so it's human nature to put that out of our mind to allow our kids to, you know, be free enough to explore the world.
Exactly. And I'm sure that it was a reminder of their own vulnerabilities.
Exactly.
So what happened here? I basically, now she, how did they get into her apartment? How did the killer get in?
We're not sure because I guess with that week that when the murder occurred, that Monday I talked to her that Monday evening, and that's when we think the murder occurred, sometime between 8 p.m., which was the 27th, and 8 a.m. in the morning. And the reason they're not exactly sure when she died is because they found her, or actually a friend went to knock on her door. She had gone to class with her, and I think from what I remember them telling me, the door was slightly ajar, and that she didn't even go in. She actually called her father, who was a DA, and he told her to call the police. And she had been dead in there for 3 days, which, you know, it was enough finding out that she was murdered. But then to hear that she was there for 3 days, you know, I had all these horrors of her, you know, slowly dying. And the saving grace, if there is such a thing like that, was that she was suffocated. And they said, you know, she died instantly. She was suffocated and raped. But, you know, there was a lot of things from screens down to even 3 days later when or a week later when they released the apartment. I was cleaning up. I was looking at the porch door. She had a second-story apartment with a porch door, and I was looking at the wood lattices and thinking, I wonder if they look like that because they were a little bit pulled out, the wood on the door. And I thought, oh, I'll have to ask Brittany. You know, one of my first times I had one of those trick thoughts.
One of those.
That,
yeah.
But it was really hard to say, you know, whether it was staged or when the detective was first at the apartment, he was in her closet and he's 6'2" and there was an entryway into the attic and he could fit his whole upper torso in that. So we don't know if somebody was waiting there. You know, there was some fingerprint evidence, but it was the DNA that finally, you know, has given us a pretty good idea of who our killer is because it's from two sources. It's not just one source of DNA. It's from both blood, and then semen was found, I think, 6 months later when they were reanalyzing. So, but there's no, we haven't had any witnesses. We still get tips. I mean, they don't call it cold because we still do get tips, but, you know, there's no witnesses, which I still find odd. With it being over the middle of the night, but you know,
right.
There's still so many questions.
Right. What is the? I know you had a the killer's profile. That now, how did you obtain that? Who helped you?
Well,
with that?
Actually, I've been really lucky. And traveling across the country, I've learned that not everybody is this lucky, but. I had a detective who really decided that he was going to communicate a lot with me, take any ideas, any tips I got. And so it was really developed by talking with him and also actually talking with other detectives and sheriffs across the U.S., but mostly he's saying, you know, he was the one who pretty much said, you know, it's possibly somebody who's doing something like this at night who, and basically taught me also that you don't want to say it's one thing. So what the information he's given me for this profile is saying it could be somebody who falls in this range of people who have sexual problems, or it could be in this range of people who have access to public, information like public service where you pay bills, you know, because they say, you know, if you have to be real careful to not want to rule out certain types of people. You don't want to just say it could be anybody, but one of these things, we've gotten tips where somebody said, yeah, I had somebody who had this just really, either they were really calm or they were explosive, you know, because I think from what I understand and what I've learned, the profile covers both, you know, the typical, if it's that somebody she knew, but it also covers more serial, which we have DNA swabbed, you know, everybody that we could think of and friends of her friends and friends of those friends and every male at the apartment complex. So I believe more so even now that he possibly is serial, just because, I mean, we probably ruled out 2,000 at least regionally in Oklahoma, and I'm sure it's been run against 500,000 at least against CODIS, and we still can't find him. Typical that these individuals who are predators like this don't get convicted often, and so there's a good chance, you know, his DNA is not in the system yet.
And it says, I was just reading about the profile here. I found it on the website, which I did post in the chat room.
Great.
And it's a Brittany Phillips murder, .net.
Right.
That he may be someone who seems to be out alone at night and is vague about what he is doing, may have sexual problems, but he either denies them with anger or it seems he focuses on them all the time. He may be into high-risk behaviors that are dangerous or cause pain for him or for others, such as hurting during sex or watching snuff films. He may always be angry. Almost anything will set him off, or is quiet and then out of the blue explodes into anger. He may or may not have been arrested for rape, but if he was, he may have a charge such as endangering or outrageous public indecency and won't say these were rape. Those arrested for rape are often charged with misdemeanors like endangering, which just blows my mind.
It does. It does.
Are
you
kidding?
Well, it's crazy because, I mean, I think people have to have consequences. But, you know, working at the female prison, I watch time and time again women coming in here for possession or writing bad checks, and they get 20 or 30 years. And we just had a judge in Tulsa, I think, who let this young man who, I think it was statutory rape, but he gave him time served. You know, I mean, I'm 58, and I really had thought that some of the attitudes towards rape of blaming the victim were going to change. But, you know, I both want us to find our killer and go to trial, and I both fear it, too, because I'm sure they will still, you know, run my daughter over the coals as somehow causing this. And it's crazy because no matter what, you know, victims don't cause it. And it's sad that, you know, even somebody who's asleep in their apartment in the middle of the night can be, you know, their memory can be subjected to that. And again, you know, these are all possibilities. It's not saying that any of these things have to be right there. And, you know, sometimes I go back and I re-edit things. But, you know, it could be somebody who's traveling. I mean, that is one profile of some type of serial killers.
Yeah. Right. They traveled during the September, October of 2004. And then when he returned, did he begin acting very different? Anxious, angry, depressed, starting using drugs or alcohol or increased use.
Who might be more not serial, but, you know, where he did it and he just can't believe he did it. And so his behavior changes.
Exactly. So we've got some different scenarios going on here, but he may have been outgoing prior to this time, changed to isolating himself. That would be, again, maybe not reminiscent of a serial killer, but he may have attempted to hurt or kill himself because of the guilt around this time. He may have committed suicide. He may be dead now. We don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
He may have driven I-35, I-44, or I-40 for work to see, and this is in Oklahoma, to see close friends, visit family, children, or because these reasons are true related to other surrounding states and must go through Oklahoma. True. He could, and
yeah, we
again,
are
like
the,
you were
called
saying,
the crossroads here, you know.
Yeah,
so
you are. You're at the crossroads. And again, what you were saying before, he could have public, he could have public service job, like bill paying cell phones act, where he accesses customer addresses or likes or someone in gas, electric, water companies might. But
yeah,
the important thing is please, even if you think your information is unimportant, this is to my listening audience and the people who hear this broadcast, even if you think your information is unimportant, remember you would not have thought of it if it didn't connect in some way.
Exactly.
Let us decide if it is important or not. You could help us find our killer. Please call the tip line. And I do want to get to the tip line here. It is. The Tulsa Police Department Homicide Hotline is 1-918-798-8477. The lead detective is Vic. Oh, I'm not going to be able to pronounce this last name.
Actually,
Regalado.
That's changed. Actually, yeah, that has changed, and I need to repost that. Yeah. He was one, Jeff Felton was our original detective, and he retired, and he's with the DA now. And Vic had it, but Vic got promoted, so it's actually gone to Detective Eddie Majors, which is really what I hope for in the long run, because Eddie Majors is over the cold cases, and even though they don't call ours a cold case, he worked beside Jeff Felton for most of the years of this investigation. And so he's well aware of the case, plus he's able to, you know, spend more time on it, because Tulsa, like so many police departments, has very little money to put on cold cases. So until they got him back to that position, all the detectives, just if they had time, could work on cold cases. And so he's one of the top investigators. So it's Eddie Majors, Detective Eddie Majors now.
Oh, okay, Eddie May. Okay, great. Anyways, that's the killer's profile. And if anything, we can, if anybody's got any information, please call that number.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
What is your
I'm sorry,
mission?
Can I say one thing about the
yes, please
calling
do.
On tips? You know, a lot of times
yes.
People say to me, oh, you've probably thought of this already. And I don't care if I hear something 5 times or 50 times. Maybe I haven't, or maybe the detective hasn't. You know, don't assume that we have thought about it. You know, it may seem, you know, like something everybody would think of, but you just never know. So I know none of us care if we were hearing it for the first time or the 100th. So.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's and it's because of the tips that keep this case alive.
It's because of them, though, it's not cold.
It's not cold. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And after this happened, let's talk about your mission. I want to talk about your mission. I don't know if we want to start with the DNA at arrest or your caravan to catch a killer, which is just amazing.
Well, I have no choice.
What should we start with? What should we start with?
The caravan, I guess, because it's from the caravan that my focus on DNA has really jumped over the fence, so to speak. So,
fabulous. Let's start with the caravan to catch a killer. Tell us about that. I think it's just amazing.
Well, it started about, I don't know, 2 years after her murder in 07, well, actually 06, I started posting little things on the car I had, and even had somebody fill the window with a picture. And I realized that I was getting more reaction and more interaction than just standing on the corners near her apartment trying to, you know, give people information about her murder. And
mm-hmm.
so
right.
I guess the wraps, you know, where they cover a whole car with pictures, started appearing different places. So I started looking for them on cars and decided I'd ask somebody, you know, where they got theirs or whatever. And the first car I parked next to, I waited for about half an hour, and this young man came out, and it ended up that he owned a company in Tulsa called Midwest Wraps, and he taught how to wrap cars at Feller's Vinyl, which is the main vinyl producers in the U.S. And he said, well, you know, I teach at this school. I'm going to go see and let you know in a couple of days if Feller's would help donate so we could put a wrap on your car. Long story short, I gave him some pictures. Within a week, he designed this unbelievable wrap that actually captured things like a butterfly background that he knew nothing about, Brittany's love of butterflies. And because what had really happened is, you know, as we started ruling out suspects, as the DNA didn't match the first year, 400, the second year, 800, I thought, I've got to find some way to get the story out beyond Oklahoma, because what if our killer's gone elsewhere? And national news really would not pick it up, because it was a middle-class, you know, individual in middle America and a non-sensational murder. And so I thought, how do I get it out? And I really believe that Brittany somehow influenced my thought, because I was thinking, what could I put on the car that would just catch it, you know, so people would know just driving by. And, you know, and that's how I came up with Caravan to Catch a Killer. And I'd not heard of anybody doing this before. So I just started out and started out spending about 3 to 4 weeks on the road and just contacting media in each city before I got there. And it's just been unbelievable and initially just to tell her story to get tips, but I began to learn about the DNA issue more and more. excuse me, because I was like everybody. I thought, oh, we have DNA. It'll be solved, you know, but it doesn't work like that. So.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It doesn't work like that. And so tell our audience, what when you go to the different states, are you're talking to the media to try to get a DNA sample, I should say, taken at arrest?
Right. Well, I'm
now,
talking to the media
for
two things.
Felony? Okay.
Well,
go ahead.
Actually, and I think a little bit differently than some people, but I can you know explain why. But you know, when I go to the cities, I talk to media, I talk to sheriffs, I talk to police and the DAs and everything to try to get the information about Brittany. But I also talk about, you know, how do we, you know, catch these individuals? And part of it is, you know, the fact that it's very hard to identify rapists and sexual predators because they don't talk about their crime. And they're also often very secretive. And it ends up being that one of the primary ways that DNA is used is in solving violent crimes where 90% of the victims are women and 9% of the children. It's the crimes against females that mostly need DNA to solve them. Now, DNA is an investigative tool. It's not, you can't win a case with just DNA. If you have no other evidence, you will not win the case. But the DNA, too, it's not even your full DNA. When you go to a doctor's office and you have a blood in a vial, that's all your DNA. But the DNA that they use for forensics or for police departments, they take 14 pieces out of the thousands that we have in us, and it creates this pattern, and then they code this pattern into numbers, and that's what's matched against other samples. And when you wait till you wait till conviction, like recently in Oklahoma, there was a man whose DNA connected to a number of crimes, but he was caught in Colorado where they take DNA arrest. When they caught him, they matched his DNA to 19 assaults in Norman, Oklahoma, and 8 in Edmond, Oklahoma, from 1986 to 2006. That means he was out there.
Mm-hmm. And those crimes could have been derailed, non-existent.
Prevented, even.
If prevented, it just wouldn't have happened had there been DNA use earlier.
Nothing else can be, you know, some people say felony, wait till felony arrest. But the problem is that some people argue that DNA says somebody's guilty. The only reason that people have that identification is because they're used to people taking it after somebody's been convicted. DNA, and actually the Supreme Court just came back with the judgment this June, that DNA is no different than fingerprints. You know, it actually is doing something similar to the Innocence Project. We're trying to stop false convictions. You know, nothing can happen with it except it can save lives. You know, I mean,
exactly.
Cold cases.
It can save victims, future victims' lives, and it can save people who are arrested that didn't do it. I mean, you know.
Exactly.
And it does hurt. Okay, so I'm just looking at over all this stuff, and I've got so much to say on this, but for one thing, facts, not myths, that opponents use. And opponents, those opposing DNA at arrest, and they're big national groups like ACLU, they hurt minorities.
Yeah, which is surprising. Uh-huh.
It is, because they hurt minorities because DNA at arrest protects against false arrest. That
right.
is...
Well, can I give you a statistic which is really interesting? The way we arrest minorities is definitely, the percentages are definitely higher than, Caucasians. But the way we imprison minorities is even, it's the difference between minorities and Caucasians is even higher. There's a much larger group of minorities that get convicted for many reasons. And often that's where the wrong convictions are. If we started using DNA at arrest, it would probably bring more non-minorities into the system. It would actually start cutting down on minority wrongful convictions, you know. And so when some of the opponents argue, it's going to be profiling and it's going to hurt minorities, it's actually not. It's actually going to start bringing more of the correct people. You know, it's still going to be different, but, you know, it definitely would help minorities because, I mean, I see it here in this prison system. You know, the poor areas are often minority areas, and the public defenders, some are good, but there's a number aren't. And some people get railroaded into some accepting some of these convictions, even without trial, and that's... I really think DNA is a benefit for any minority group because that's where a lot of our false convictions come from. So.
One of our chatters in the chat room has a very good point. This is Hobnob. She's a dear friend of mine. She says, with DNA, when you go anywhere, you leave a bit of yourself behind and take a part of it with you. And then there's the family DNA is now working, too. If a relative has their DNA on record, it can possibly lead to a family member. What do you think of that?
Well, actually,
they might
that's
find
familial.
A close relative, such as a son or cousin, nephew, whatever, and they see the similarities to DNA,
it's familial DNA is unbelievable because it really, you may, you know, if you think about somebody scanning the horizon, you know, and it gives you a chance to scan it a little bit more, you know. And again, people go, well, we don't, why should we have our family's DNA taken? Well, that's how they solved identifying the 9/11 people. That's how they're solving a lot of these unidentified remains through family's DNA.
Great.
And
great point.
Yeah, the risk would be if something bad could be done with DNA, then we would be fearful of it, you know, in those situations. All of us as parents, you know, how many parents have, you know, taken that little swab at events where in case your kid gets abducted, you can, you know, have that DNA sample. I mean, nothing bad can happen from the DNA. Fingerprints are 88% accurate. DNA, you know, is 99.9, something like that. And, you know, I'm passionate about this because it could have saved my daughter's life. And, you know, she was going to go into cancer research to develop medicine
for cancer.
And to me, I think this is her passion, trying to save lives this way, because it just everything, it would cut down these assaults and murders down to a third of what they are in cold cases. And it's just, I don't wish this on any parent because it's a loss that'll never end, you know?
Right. Exactly. Another thing from Hobnob in our chat room, she says, personally, I think DNA should be taken at birth and put on record. It will identify criminals. I know, bravo. It will identify criminals at crimes, and it will establish the family links. And innocent folk have nothing to fear from DNA. Guilty people do. Maybe that's what the ACLU fears. I'm not sure.
Well, you know, and it's, I wish I could get it out. I think it really is a public education thing, you know, and I keep wishing I had time to go into every single church or temple, you know, and because on the road when I talk to people about DNA and I tell them how it's protected and I tell them that it's those 14 pieces that have, you know, basically none of your information in there, you know, everybody goes, well, why aren't we doing it? And it's some of the lawmakers just don't, I mean, you can sit there and tell them that. I mean, the senator who wrote, who authored our law the year before he did that blocked us in the, our Senate, and he educated himself about the law and now has been one of the best authors. But it's when people hear it, that's when, you know, we can get these laws changed, when they understand the facts, or if we can get into a debate with ACLU or whomever, because the things that they say, your DNA is floating, going to be floating out there. Well, it's not your DNA. It's these numbers, and the names aren't even connected to it when it goes to CODIS or the profiling and all that. We have answers and facts to all of this, and it's just somehow, you know, that's what I try to do when I travel. I try to just educate communities. You know, Brittany was the girl next door. This could happen to your child or your loved one.
Exactly. It's not, this could be your daughter, your mother, your sister, your best friend. It could be anything. And the majority, I forget what the percentage is now. I think it's like 90% are assaults against women. And I'm not sure about that. I'm just off the top of my head, but these are things that, you know, if we have the DNA, we can stop innocent people from being hurt.
Right. And Mitch Morrissey actually.
Chicago did a survey or a study, I should say. Yeah. And, let me just look through my notes here because this is just amazing.
And I have a copy, and I can send people these studies that you're going to talk about, because they're unbelievable what you visually see.
Mm-hmm. We have Chicago Preventable Crimes. There are eight examples. I have two of eight examples from Chicago study. They are Virginia, Indiana, and Denver studies. Andre Crawford was charged with 11 murders and one attempted murder, aggravated sexual assault. If the state had required him to give a DNA sample during his felony arrest on March 8, 1993, a DNA match could have been obtained with the DNA evidence recovered from his first murder. 10 murders could have been prevented. Mm-hmm. If Crawford's DNA had been taken on March 6, 1993, after he was arrested for attempted sexual abuse, which is a felony, the subsequent 10 murders and one rape would not have happened.
Exactly. And the sad thing on each of these studies, it's one after another. I mean, that is just so unbelievable that these individuals, you know, lives were taken when, you know, it's something so simple like this could have saved. And it's how many cases do we have to see like this? Even recently in Oklahoma, right when they were voting on the laws about the man who had the assaults in Edmond, you know, it's what else do we have to show you all? You know, but I still think it's part of that, you know, bias that's been there about victims all along, because I still think lawmakers have this, or the lawmakers who are against it, have this idea that, you know, this only happens to certain type of people, you know, that nobody I love would become a victim like this. And that's, you know, partially why they blame, people blame victims, because they don't want to believe that anybody they love can be hurt like this. But the sad thing is, I'm a psychologist. She was a chemistry major. She was in an apartment next to high school. It was the middle of the night. How could she have ever even caused anything like that? And I know she didn't, but I'm saying that some people treat it like that. If, you know, when they
like
minimize the facts that these individuals are out there doing that.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. There's one other thing I want to read to our listeners. Requiring DNA for felony arrests at arrest does solve and prevent violent crimes. And this was, waiting for conviction costs lives. Study by the City of Chicago and presented to the state legislature in 2005, Chicago Study on Preventable Crimes. This study shows how 60 violent crimes could have been prevented, including 53 murders and rapes, if these eight men had had DNA taken at one of their arrests. Most states require DNA collection upon felony conviction, but review of criminal records shows offenders often have numerous felony arrests before conviction. That's the problem. Chicago's examination of criminal activities of eight individuals identified 60 violent crimes that if DNA had been taken at arrest, the fingerprint of the 21st century could have been prevented. In each case, the offender committed previously undetected violent crimes that would have been solved through a DNA match, but DNA was not required at arrest. Instead, 22 murders, victims ranging from 24 to 44 years of age, 30 rapes, victims ranging from 15 to 65 years of age, and attempted rapes happened. Right?
I know. Yep. And it's crazy. But, and here's the thing, you know, at least 26 now states take DNA, and some at felony arrest, some at all arrest. And, you know, there's still 24 states that haven't passed it, and hopefully with the Supreme Court ruling it's going to happen. But why I go even beyond felony arrest is because in my traveling to the 46 states and the 108 stories we've had, I often talk to detectives after the story, and one point that initially a lot of them started bringing up, and I fully agree with it now, is a lot of times they were getting somebody on some minor thing like a DUI or unpaid traffic, things that aren't a felony, and the individual might be naive about what his or her DNA can show, and they get the DNA from a minor arrest, not a felony, you know, because especially sexual predators, what I've learned over the years is they often don't get arrested for their minor crimes. They may get arrested for something else where they're not being careful, you know. And so if we take it at, you know, I'll take felony arrest if that's all we can get. But to me, that still holds on to, well, you're saying it's felony, so that means you've already sort of convicted him in your mind. And then that pushes people to say, well, DNA means conviction, which it doesn't. It's just a forensic tool. You cannot convict somebody with just DNA. You have to have other evidence. But,
oh, yeah.
You know, it, I just wish more people could see these studies. I feel like putting them up on billboards because it's when you see it, you know, it's unbelievable. You know, it just doesn't make sense.
Hey, DNA can exonerate a prisoner after 10, 20 years in prison even.
Mm-hmm.
They can, you know, after a long time in prison, I forget the max I've heard of, but let's say 10 years, and DNA can exonerate someone when the crime happened prior to the knowledge of DNA, and
mm-hmm.
they can be free. So why not have it at the very beginning instead of having them spend 10 years of their or 15
exactly.
years of their life?
Exactly.
Let's start it from the beginning. Let's see where the where we fall here. You know.
It affects lives on both sides. You know, you're taking away somebody's lives for 20 years. You know, at times with these false convictions.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And why not just nip it in the bud right away? DNA at arrest protects and saves lives. I believe that. DNA at arrest stops the invasion of privacy of the victims of repeat offenders.
Mm-hmm.
How true. How true.
Can I tell you one real
thing.
Quick?
Yeah. Oh, please.
Oh, sorry. I just often have all this information. Really interesting, and I could say in probably at least a third of the cities where I do stories, that same day or the next day, all of a sudden there comes a story on the news where an individual had just been, arrested maybe for rape, and it was some minor charge, and they were only kept a year, and they were let out, and then they were picked up in another city a couple of years later because, you know, they, even for some of these minor crimes at conviction, not all the states are even taking their DNA then. And so you have these individuals, you know, who are, you know, basically getting arrested and then picked up down the road. And until they get to a state where they take it at arrest, you know, they're continuing to do it. You hear of these stories time and time again, you know, and it's just like some of your people on the they were posting. It's just, you know, it's insane that people can't see, you know, how obvious this is. Yeah. So
right,
I appreciate
exactly.
any ideas that people have of trying to educate, you know, the lawmakers on this because
exactly. And I'll tell you, our gal here, my good friend Hobnob, if anybody can get it done, she can. Although unfortunately, she lives across the pond over there in Great Britain.
Wow.
She did say, and this is so true. We need to stop thinking criminals can be helped. Must get jobs, can be cured. Many are repeat offenders. They can't or don't want to be cured or helped. We need to start making being a criminal a real bad idea. If we teach kids that you commit a crime, you'll do serious time regardless of your age. And with the DNA, hey, I would think twice. You know, Texas has the death penalty, well, as many states do. But I tell you what, in Texas, I would hate to even think about doing some kind of serious crime because they carry out their threats, you know.
Well,
but it doesn't seem to deter people.
Yeah, unfortunately, with the sexual predators, and I guess I would sort of separate it. I'd say these type of criminals, yes, sexual predators, you can't help them. And when they start saying, you know, putting them through treatment, that's ridiculous because they're hardwired, these killers and stuff. But the DNA, you know, is actually two things. I mean, in England, they have a much more efficient DNA system. But, the death penalty may not be deterring these predators because I've talked to a lot of people at the prisons where they do the death penalty, and they say most of these guys who are going to be killing like this, they're so hardwired and they face death every day, they're more afraid of being caught in that cell for 500 years, which is why possibly I wouldn't wish the death penalty on my killer, because I don't know where he would go, you know, and I want to torture him for the rest of my life. But, you know, if we ever catch him, but I'm not saying that. But, you know, it's the death penalty, they say, hasn't stopped people, but DNA will stop people. I mean, it comes down
That's right.
to that we have to get
That's
them,
right.
you know, off. And there's actually been some good pushes over across the pond, and we've had a number of groups looking at, I think, what's it called? My brain's dead. The Scotland Yard, they turn around.
Mm-hmm.
their DNA analysis much quicker than we do. And even Canada has a pretty good system. And, you know, it's sad that, you know, the United States, you know, in general doesn't care about its, especially females, because, like you said earlier, DNA is mostly used to solve the crimes, the violent crimes against women and children, and rape kits are where we have the backlogs of it. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you know, I thought things would change by the time I was 58, but it seems like the attitudes towards women as victims still, you know, in many ways is leaving us to be victims. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One other thing, we've got about 12 minutes left, and I want to touch on the playing cards. This is something, Maggie, that I have always wondered about. They have playing cards that have that can be, you know, used in prisons
mm-hmm.
for the people to play cards with, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But yet on the back they have information about unsolved murders or missing people. And what is the deal with that? I'm thinking that should be in every state. I mean,
I wish
it's so hard to get that. Tell us about that.
Well, it's great because on the inside of the card you have a picture of the individual and some little data. And in the states where people have got these funded, you put them in all the prisons, and that's where you're going to get some of your tips, because people are around this, or somebody, you know, maybe heard their celly or somebody talk. And there's a wide distribution. Actually, Bicycle is one of the primary card makers. The problem is you have to find funding, and in Kentucky and a couple of other states, and I have these example packets, sometimes the Sheriff's Association will join in, or the police department, or often the police department is, and the sheriff's, and they're all wanting it, but if you don't have the funding for it, so that's been the problem with Oklahoma. I've talked to Bicycle and, you know, and the detectives and everybody, because it's a great way, especially cold, because, you know, people are going to read it, and it's just the, you know, it is a source of getting tips.
Right. Is the Bicycle Company, which, of course, we know Bicycle does the playing cards, mainly here in
mm-hmm.
the States, and maybe everywhere, I'm not sure, but are they the ones that put these cards out?
Well, they do them on order. They actually, you know, have a whole thing set up. I think it was possibly in Florida or New York. I first learned of them because some parents of some missing individual who live in Albany, New York, they had ones done for their unsolved and missing, and got it funded through, I think, their sheriff's department. And in meeting them, I learned about it. And then it was in my own research that I began to talk to Bicycle and learned that they, you know, have connection with distributors for all the prisons. But it's usually that they have it set up now, and I think they've done about 5 different states, or even sometimes it's just maybe a regional area, that they will work with the designs and stuff, but it's the sheriffs and the police departments that have their cold or their unsolved, and, you know, they can decide. I mean, you have 52 cases at least you can put it on, but it, and there's probably some data, I'll try to find it, but of, you know, it's just another source. I mean, I go to a lot of the states at the border of the U.S. because I learned at one point that a lot of the individuals who move around stop up around where you are, you know, I mean, because they run out of money or something. So, you know, but the cards are unbelievable. And I've been trying to get them. You know, I'm not a good fundraiser. I mean, I just don't know how to do it, I guess. I try, but I don't know.
Well, maybe we can put our heads together and think of something here. I think we can. Another thing, we have about 8 minutes left, but one thing you write about in Brittany's website is, and I want to read this because it's so touching. You can hear me doing my paperwork here. I'll find it. I know where it's at. Okay. You write, "I am her voice. Those who know our history know how hard I fight and also how hard things seem to keep getting." I got to put my glasses on. "Don't know. It makes it hard for a bit to breathe. Of course, I will get past it because I can't change what is. But I try so hard to pay it forward, to do things for others, to do this mostly on my own funding. And it seems, even though I know it is just bad timing, that each time I really need something like being able to do the caravan, then I get hit with something so big, like a transmission breakdown, that I can do nothing but roll with the punches. I am tired, but I won't give up. I know I just have to accept this solitary road." And that is a quote from you that touches my heart, and I love it. And, you know, when people, you have, how many caravans have you, I mean, how many vehicles? You put thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of miles.
Yeah. I have.
And
I mean,
they don't last forever. You know, when you're talking about 40 states, it just doesn't, you know, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, I've done 68,000 miles on 11 caravans, and I was just planning to leave on my 12th caravan, and I'm still planning to, but then this car that I haven't had that long, transmission died on me about 2 weeks ago. So that was, you know, I vent and then I get up and I move on because nothing is going to stop me doing something for Brittany. But that vent was during my sitting at home in 106-degree heat, so not wanting to be out in it without a car, and yes, going, "I can't believe this is all happening." But, you know, I mean, I survive everything because I'm never going to stop this. You know, I'm going to always be there for Brittany, but it's just sometimes it's just inventing like that and saying I'm going to keep on because, I mean, she would do the same for me. And I just, you know, I have no choice.
Right.
I have no choice.
Right. And when people even donate $1, you know, it begins covering gas on what is usually 6,000 miles.
Yeah.
And,
well, and it's people
hard
do that, I mean.
To ask. It's hard to ask for that. It is hard to ask for that, but it's necessary. It is. And and people can, let's talk again about the website, where if someone would like to donate,
our PayPal, it's BrittanyPhillipsMurder.net. And the PayPal button is right there near the top of the, when you go to the main page and you look right below the, all the different pages. And I've been trying to develop something. I mean, I if people are okay with it, I always like posting when somebody, you know, has donated, because sometimes people do that just when they see our car going by, which always just floors me that all of a sudden, oh, I saw you in Texas or I saw you in California, you know, and it's, I mean, I've met such unbelievable people doing this.
Right. Oh, exactly. Exactly. And I posted the link to the website on the chat room, and it just, the car itself, it's so, it's just such an eye catcher, you know, who wouldn't notice that. And you do great work. And if it isn't just for anything, it's for Brittany, and a beautiful girl who is still beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And any last thoughts or words? We're coming down to the wire here.
Well, I just find every time that I'm able to tell Brittany's story, I mean, it really is a gift, and it's people like you and all the other people that I meet on the road. I mean, I'm able to keep on because I'm touched by other people's passion. And
exactly.
You know, I do it in honor of her, and that's how you survive this. I mean, you can't bring them back. I wish I could, but, you know, when I'm talking about my little girl all the time, you know, and it touches other people's hearts, I mean, you know, that fills a mother's ego, I guess, you know, because I miss her terribly,
yep.
But this is our mission now.
This is the mission. Well, Maggie, thank you so much for being with me tonight. It's been a wonderful show. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. And you have a place in my heart, you know, for doing this. I mean, we can never repay you. This is a gift for us. So.
Oh, it's a gift for me. No repay.
It's a gift for both of us.
It's a gift for both of us. Okay. I want to thank our folks in the chat room tonight. We've got Delilah, Stephen, and Hobnob, who is genius when it comes to crimes and criminals. I'll just say that. Love you, girl. Okay. Our next show will be next Tuesday. Tune in as we continue to analyze the effects of organized crime in America. And, okay, that was wrong. I'm sorry. I got the wrong thing. Okay, sorry. Thanks to my public relations. I'm sorry about that, folks. I have a show that runs before this one, and I read the wrong closing. Sorry. Okay. I'm so sorry. Thanks to my public relations team at ImaginePublicity.com. Our next show will be next Tuesday. Tune in as we continue to analyze cases that wreak havoc on families looking for answers and seeking justice, and discuss crime-related topics with the experts. To hear a rebroadcast of tonight's show, go to www.crimewire.blogspot.com. Turn on the volume at your computer and the show will automatically play. And please join me next Tuesday at 2:30 Pacific Time for Robert George Allen's show, Ghosts and Gangsters, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Until next time, God bless and stay safe. Good night, everyone. Of course, as usual, hors d'oeuvres and cocktails will be served in the chat room following the show. Good night. Good night, Maggie.
Thank you so much. Thanks. And tell Delilah thanks, too. I'll send her an email.
So. I will. Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.